Hey everyone, and welcome back to the First Act Podcast. I'm your host, Harry G, and today's episode is for all of you who dream of working as a talent agent. This is part 3 of building success as a talent agent with Joe Atamian of Wasserman. Listen in as we break down Joe's unique path discovering and developing such incredible talent as Big Gigantic, The Lumineers, and much more. This is an episode you won't want to miss.
And now, hosted by Harry G, this is your one-stop shop for hot talk straight from the top. Whether you're trying to build a job in pop, rock, or any other artsy schlock, here's your top dog with info that can't be bought, it's gotta be sought. So sit back, crack a six-pack, because we're about to chit-chat and rip facts. It's the First Act Podcast.
So the reason I ask is because I've had people on the podcast that have been very successful with NFT launches, but not purely just as a collectible. They will build some sort of utility into it or some sort of sense of ownership within their community that they develop. I think a lot of artists that are independent that might not be signed with an agent or a label or anything independent, right? A lot of these artists feel like they need to have millions of streams to monetize. Or they have to be able to draw a crowd of, you know, many hundreds, if not in the thousands, to be successful. However, what I've been seeing is that in the Web3 space, there's opportunities to be able to monetize, but also be able to give a unique experience to their fan base using some of these technologies. So I was just kind of curious your thoughts on that. And you could be I want you to be completely honest. And if you don't think that it's something that's useful, or maybe not for your roster, then, you know, you can tell me that, because, you know, I'm just curious to know what people in the music space really think of it.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had a ton of acts who have really dug into that space. I think that there probably is, honestly, and we could have a whole nother podcast about this, but you get me going on ticketing, like blockchain NFT could fix ticketing. Like it could all be fixed in using that technology. How? 100%. Just basically the fact that, like, you can control let's call the ticket the NFT. You can control what the markup on that ticket is. So, like, fighting scalpers is the bane of my existence, because they always get tickets, and unless you price tickets to what the true value of the ticket is, there's always going to be somebody who comes in and scoops that cream off the top in the secondary market.
Right.
Having blockchain ticketing could fix that. You could set what the upcharge is on any ticket. You could make it face value if you wanted to. You know, I just, the ticket masters of the world, this is how they make their money. So, like, as long as venues continue to sign ticketing contracts with these huge ticketing companies, like, I just don't know if it ever changes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest value in my mind.
One of the things that I was thinking of, this could be off the record, but one of the things that, you know, I mentioned to you, I play in this poker league with other music people. And, you know, some of us are music tech people. I'm like, I've deviated a little bit more into the tech side, which is why I asked some of these tech questions, because I'm curious, you know.
Yeah.
And one of the guys that plays in the league is also tech minded. And so we started spitballing some ideas, because we were saying that, like, ticketing is pretty broken. And one of the things that we thought was interesting is, what if you can have, like, a ticket NFT that you get for free that you can scan in with your QR code, or you scan in with a separate ticket that's like an image that is all glossy and whatever. And when you scan in with that image, then you get notified, like, there's an additional reward for scanning in with that ticket.
Mm-hmm.
So that way, you know, for something simple, you could have all the tickets that are scanned in with that NFT ticket, they get all put into like a lottery and there's a draw. I think that would prevent scalpers, because scalpers would then say, well, you know, I don't want to give up my winning lottery ticket. That could be one way to combat it without trying to fight Ticketmaster or Eventbrite or any of the big companies.
Yeah, I don't know if it would. It's been interesting, especially coming out of COVID. Like, I don't know if that prevents scalpers from from getting involved in the secondary, because like, yes, it would be great if they had that, but really getting in the door is where the main value is for them. Mm-hmm. Like I saw it a lot this summer, and these fucking scalpers, they're just always one step ahead of everything. Instead of going after the on sale, you know, they basically will, we're getting way in the weeds here.
It's fine.
They waited till like, I don't know, 3 weeks after the on sale, and saw that some shows had started selling out. And basically what they'll do is they'll have their bots go and put everything in carts to figure out how many tickets are left for the show. So like for the Lumineers at the Gorge, like one day we sold like 3,000 tickets 3 weeks after the on sale and sold out. And then we went back and looked at the traffic, and they had carted up until the point where there were no more tickets left. So they knew how many tickets were left, and then they bought the rest of the tickets. And then we ended up refunding them. You know, we have to go back and refund them all, but like, that's something that is insane. Like, how do you combat that? And they were all lawn tickets. So that's my point, was like, they just want the sold out show. And it doesn't really matter what they can mark them up for, because like the markup on lawn tickets isn't going to be that much. But I'm sure whatever formula they're looking at, they're like, oh, we can make $15 a ticket. Like, it's worth buying these 3,000 tickets.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's just an ongoing battle.
And they do that on from tour to tour, and they can make 50 grand on a show.
Yeah. And like the technology that they have like allows them to make the decision on whether or not they should buy. Like if their bots would have carded 10,000 tickets, they'll be like, oh, well, maybe the demand's not here for this.
Right.
Like, we're not going to buy them, but it's, you know, there's 3,000 tickets left. We're going to go snatch them all up.
So, all right, let's pivot, because I know that we did get into a little bit of the weeds.
You get me going on ticketing, man.
I really struck a nerve.
Yes.
All right. Let's talk about some general questions. So as an agent, what is a regular day for you like? What's a morning routine in detail?
Oh, man, in detail.
If you don't give me enough detail, I'm going to go to Jason Kupferman. I'm going to ask him, because he was your roommate.
That's true. Well, the morning routine is different now, because we moved. I'm in the Chicago suburbs, but we have like a little hobby farm with a bunch of goats and sheep and chickens. So my morning routine is I get up and I shovel shit.
At what time?
I don't know, like 6. And my day can only go up from there. So that's the way I look at it. Coffee, maybe workout. And then I've tried to batch my days as far as workflow goes. I've gotten bad at it again, where it's like, I won't look at my email for an hour or so, and, you know, do emails for an hour, work on a certain band for an hour, make phone calls. It's a very loose system that I've gotten away from. And I feel like I'm back now to just like playing whack-a-mole in my inbox. But yeah, there's really no rhyme or reason to it anymore. It's like, after doing it long enough, you kind of know what's urgent and what's not. But yeah, a lot of emails, a lot of phone calls. I try to spend more time on the phone than a lot of people probably.
Are most of your phone calls now, have they moved to things like this, like Zoom meetings? Or do you guys keep the phone?
I'm on the phone more than I'm on Zoom. Okay. Yeah. But that's also just like, you know, it's not always anything in particular, like business-wise, just like I have people that I'll just call and bullshit with while I'm walking around the house or making lunch and, you know, on the train to the office and just catch up with folks. Yeah.
Oh, are you still going to the office?
Yeah, we're going in 3 days a week now.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
How was the shift going from MPA to Paradigm, and then from Paradigm to Wasserman?
It's interesting, because like I said, a lot of the people, I'm trying to think, most of the people who were in that Monterey office with me are still at Wasserman. So they made the move from MPA to Paradigm and also from Paradigm to Wasserman. So it's a lot of the same people I've been working with for 15 years.
The shift must have been pretty easy. It must have been pretty good then.
Yeah, for sure. And it just feels like with each one of those steps, it kind of has taken, it's just more tools in the toolbox kind of thing. Like, MPA was very touring focused. It was a boutique agency. Paradigm helped us expand that a little bit, but there were still a lot of things that were missing. Wasserman feels like kind of, another step forward, a little bit on steroids as far as where we're at now. So it's been good.
And do you still look for like baby bands to develop, or do you look to, take a band from an agent that you're like, oh, I really want that band on my roster? Like, is it any I don't get that vibe from you, but I'm just
I wouldn't even know how to do it, man. Like, I don't even know what you would say.
You just got to drop your card in the gig bag.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's like, I'm going to make you a star. I sign stuff super early. Like, I don't sign a lot, but that's kind of what fills my cup, so to speak. I've heard a couple of people say that term lately, so I'll say it. Getting on board early, it's just more fun. And it's more fun, like, when you get to, the next level and the next level and the next level. It's just having been involved from day one, it means a lot to the act, and they don't forget that. And it's also just being a part of the full ride is what gets me up and going. But the flip side is that you sign stuff early and it's just a lot of grinding.
Yeah. Do you have any advice, maybe as we wrap up, for students that are looking to make a career in entertainment?
Yeah. I would say just get involved as involved as you can, like, especially now, like, everyone is so short staffed. Like, if you showed up to an agency or a management company and be like, put me to work, they would be like, I have 8 million things you could do. Yes, you're hired. So like, that getting your foot in the door is probably easier now than it's ever been before. And, that's, I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing, because like the reason why, like you watch Entourage and you watch Ari just berate Lloyd for an hour. Like there's a reason why so many people are out of the industry, like especially younger people. And that I'm feeling like that's kind of shifting, as far as like, we need to treat people like people, and like these need to be good working conditions. But I feel like we're kind of in a weird in between space now, where like people are, and this is across all industries, it feels like, but like people are really taking a look at what they're doing every day and what they value, and going in and doing grunt work to not be appreciated. I think a lot of people have gotten out of the music industry because that's how it was for a really long time. Like, you started in the mailroom, you started doing ticket counts, like, It was not fun. It definitely was not fun. So,
but it was glamorous.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's so glamorous.
And I'm not joking though. It was glamorous.
In your romanticized mind, yes, it was. But like, I look back at some of the shit I had to do, like, and it's just, it wasn't glamorous. Like, in my brain, this is like, this is the music industry, this is so glamorous. But like, not really.
And what you can afford,
Right.
I remember my tiny little room in my Brooklyn apartment. I didn't have enough space for a desk. A night table. So my bed was pushed all the way up to like that little old school like heater that like, kind of looks like an accordion all closed together. I don't know how to better describe that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
That hot thing next to the bed. And so
the radiator. The
radiator. Thank you.
Yeah.
So I went out and I made my own night table. And the way I did it was I found when I was walking home from the subway one night, I found like in someone's trash, like a piece of wood that I was like, huh, that looks about the same size as my radiator. And so I put it on top of the radiator and I made sure it was disconnected that it wouldn't heat up.
Well, I was like, that sounds like a fire hazard. I don't like where this is going.
And then I put my laptop on it and I was like, this, I'm an agent right now, right? Like I'm an agent at Artist Group International and I'm not making enough money to pay more than $1,000 a month.
Right. Right.
And yeah, oh my God, it was, and when I was over at Webster Hall, I think I told you I worked with Heath Miller.
Yeah.
It's my podcast. I'm allowed to say whatever the hell I please, right? So
yeah, 100%.
Heath would call me Lloyd every day. Without fail, he'd go, Lloyd.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I'm torn on it. Like it's not a good working environment, and like it wasn't for, you know, decades. But like I feel like a lot of people kind of got through it and were better for it. Like, you know, like I know I am. Like I there were times where I worked till the sun was coming up. Like that's not healthy, but like I sure proved that I wanted to go do this.
Yeah. You really did. And mom and dad were like, well, yeah, I guess he could do it.
I guess he can do it. 100%.
All right. We'll close it off with, what was your, if you had to choose one moment of your career that was your favorite?
Oh, geez.
It doesn't, you know, you don't have to offend anybody by not picking them, because there's going to be many.
It's
favorites.
Just, it's so easy and it's such low hanging fruit and it's fresh in my mind. But at the very end of the Lumineer show at Wrigley Field this past weekend, Wes, the lead singer, gave me a shout out. It was the last thing he said on stage. And it was pretty sweet. Like I've been a Cubs fan my whole life. And that's fresh in my brain. Like literally rewatched the show today, like while I was working, because we had a live stream link. That was pretty special.
That is very special.
Yeah.
I like that as an answer. You know what? It's not low hanging fruit. It's low hanging fruit because it's like all the stars sort of align for that to happen.
Yeah. And the reason I said it's low hanging fruit is because it just happened like last week and it's like super fresh in my brain.
And did he know how important it was for you?
Oh yeah, for sure.
That's why he did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How many people were at Wrigley Field? Huge.
40, 41 almost. Probably more than that with comps and everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it ever surreal to you realizing that like the Lumineers are your act? And like everyone in the world knows like the Lumineers.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
It's a little weird, right?
It is a little weird, but it's also weird because like I've known them for so long. So like to me, they're still the guys that were playing at Hotel Utah in San Francisco to 15 people. And like, they haven't really changed that much, which is saying a lot, but like they haven't really changed that much as people. So like, that's also weird to me is like, people get like super, like my sister is a huge fan to the point where like she wanted to get a tattoo of some Lumineers lyrics. So I had Wes write them out for her in his handwriting to get him tattooed. Like she's like super, super fan. But that's weird to me because like, it's just, I'm like, it's just Wes and Jer, like chill out. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah. Be cool.
Be cool. Be cool.
All right. Agent versus promoter. So you have an account on Instagram called Agent versus Promoter.
Yes.
That you share with who?
Scott Leslie, who is a promoter based in Madison.
Okay, so is he making all the I hate agent memes and you're making all the I hate promoter memes?
No. I mean, Scott will probably complain that I said this, but it's mostly me posting. My back hurts from carrying the team a little bit. So hopefully hopefully he watches this and steps his game up.
So how do you come up with all these memes? Like, are you just like roaming around the house or early in the morning, you're shoveling shit and you're like, you know, this would be really great.
It's a little bit of like reverse engineering where it's like, you know, I'll see a meme or something on Instagram and be like, oh, I could use that for this scenario. Like it's more like finding the meme first and then working it into the music industry insanity that we deal with every day.
So, but how many followers do you have?
Well, when we started it, it was anonymous. And that was the fun part of it, was like, we definitely went at some people. We dropped I mean, I don't even know what year this was. but it was before we had an Instagram page. It was just a Tumblr. It was a Tumblr account, and we dropped a 30 under 30, an age inverse promoter 30 under 30. You should probably dig that up and go read it, because we were anonymous and we just ripped into people.
I love that. We're going to have to set up a second time to talk more about this, because I want to read that 30 under 30 to you, and I want you to tell me who's who. Like,
oh no, it says names. It names names.
Yeah, but I want more context.
Oh, okay. Got it. Yes, we can do that.
Can we do that? That'll be fun. Yeah,
100%. We can do that.
Yeah.
But we started it, like, we sent back, we were both huge Seinfeld fans, and he did something, and I like sent him a Seinfeld meme, and then he sent me one back, and I sent him one back. Like, it was this email thread, and I was like, dude, we could totally do something with this. Like, this industry is so stupid. Like, and that's
don't say that.
What's that?
Don't say that.
It's so ridiculous. Yeah. Is that a better word?
Yeah. Because stupid would imply that the people in it are stupid. But that's not the fact. It's
some.
It's very ridiculous. Happens every day in the music industry that you would never expect to happen in your life.
Yeah. Like, have you ever tried explaining to people like how our business works?
Yes.
Like real business people. They're wait, what? Like, the promoters are stealing from you, and they're getting kickbacks from the venues, and there's ticketing fees that nobody knows where they're going. It's like, how do you live your life? Like, how do you work in this industry? Like, it's insane.
It's literally like a game of cops and robbers.
100%. But you know what? I'll take it, because if everyone is honest, there would be no need for agents. So I'll take it. But yes, anyway, Age of Murder. It was a lot of fun when it was anonymous.
Yeah.
Somehow, I still don't know how this happened, but at one point, it's somehow linked to my Facebook page. And so, like, all the followers got, like, the little notifications, like, your friend Joe Atamian is posting his Agent vs. Promoter. And my phone, like, I was at a Sturgill Simpson show in Atlanta, and I got, like, 150 text messages in like 2 hours. I was like, what is happening right now? And Scott called me. He's like, we have a problem. So
were the text messages like angry or happy, or what were these texts saying?
It was mostly happy. We never went like too hard over the top at anyone in particular. It was mostly like, I cannot believe this is you guys. But then Scott is like, so Scott didn't get involved in the whole like technical glitch. Right. So we waited like a week, and then like we gave, I don't know if it was Dave Brooks or who it was, but somebody the exclusive, and like came out together on on Billboard.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good story.
It is a good story. And then we spent a good chunk of the, we've always wanted to make it into a TV show. So we spent the first couple months of the pandemic writing the pilot to Agent vs. Promoter.
And I mean, you probably know some people that can help get it made.
Yeah, it must not be very good. I don't know. I haven't gotten any calls back.
Oh, you've been sending it out to people?
A few people that I trust.
Get a writer on board.
We need a writer on board. Anybody, any writers, hit me up.
We actually had a really great comedy writer we just released. We're releasing part 3 of his episode this week. He's worked with The Simpsons, Third Rock from the Sun. I could put you guys in touch.
Let's go. Full circle, baby.
Yeah, I could actually do that. He and he hosts a poker league every Tuesday night. He plays in my league. I play in his. And you got you have your own poker league, right? With Polestar.
Yeah. Yeah. Just the tournament. Just the tournament.
Yeah. But I mean, like the annual. I want an invite to that. That's my goal. I wanna be flown out to Polestar to play in that.
Come on out. Love it. We don't need to fly you out. The way you're talking, you're gonna win all the money. Like just come out, and then your flight's paid for.
I'm not gonna win all the money.
That's what somebody who would win all the money would say.
Lalo Medina wins like all the time, right? So he'll probably
he only won this last one. I don't know if he's played. I don't know if you know. I don't know if he's played in other years though. I don't remember him.
Yeah, no, I'll definitely bring some people out who are going to want to play, because it's music industry, and like it's going to be it'll just be a good time.
I know. It's like we talk about the type of degenerate folks who work in this industry, and like I myself being one of them. Somebody asked me, they're like, I won't say who it was. It was a manager I work with. I sent out the invite for the poker tournament, and he comes back, or his assistant writes back. He's like, she's like, you know, so-and-so won't be able to make it, but he'd love to make a donation to whatever charity you're working with. And I had to
It's not a charity.
Tell him to keep his money, but he could stake me if he wants.
You should have said, tell him to Venmo at.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God. So yes, the poker tournament's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'll definitely be coming out for that. All right, Joe, have a great rest of your day. Have an awesome week, and we'll be in touch. All right.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Ciao.
Remember, new episodes release every Thursday at 12 p.m. Pacific. See you there.